The Alaska Libertarian Party wants less government and more personal freedom. They would abolish the IRS and the TSA. I'm Lori Townsend. How would a libertarian administration change the way the state is managed? What impact would a libertarian have on the United States Senate? We've got libertarian candidates Carolyn Cliff for governor, Andrew Lee for lieutenant governor, and Mark Fish for U.S. Senate here to answer those questions and more on today's Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Ready to quit smoking, using e-cigarettes or other tobacco? Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free, confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online, and now introducing Text to Quit. Text to Quit helps you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. If you believe that the individual is more important than the collective, how do you keep order in society? What does a free market system really look like? What is the United Nations Agenda 21, and why are libertarians opposed to it? Here to answer those questions and more are three of the state's Libertarian Party candidates. Carolyn Clift, candidate for governor. Good morning.
Hi, Lori. Good morning to you.
Thanks for being here. Andrew Lee also joins us. He's the lieutenant governor candidate running with Mrs. Clift. Good morning.
Good morning. It's nice to be here.
And also Mark Fish, candidate for U.S. Senate. Good morning.
Good morning, Lori.
Thank you so much for being here, all three of you. And I want to invite folks across the state to call with your questions. You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or if you're in the Anchorage area, call 550-8422, 550-8422. Let's first start with just learning a little bit about who you are and as Alaskans and as libertarians, and then we'll discuss the libertarian beliefs and party platform. Carolyn, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and why you're running for office.
Well, I came to Alaska in 1979 from Arizona. It just turned out that I found out I was pregnant on the trip up here. So that kind of made a big difference in what we did when we got up here. So immediately my husband went to the Teacher Placement Bureau at University of Alaska Fairbanks and found out that there was an opening out in a little town called Aniak. And he flew to Aniak to find out what it was like and came back to where we were staying and said, oh, you're going to like it. And there's a job for you, too.
And did you?
Oh, I did. We lived there for 16 years, and I did like it. It's a very nice community on the Kuskokwim River. Mm-hmm. And a very close, you know, community. Everybody knows everybody. And it takes you a while when you come to the big town not to wave to everybody on the street because you're so used to doing that in a small town like Aniak. And we were out there quite a while. My husband retired out there. And at about that time, I got my certification in special education. And I was hired by the Anchorage School District in 1996. So I've been in Anchorage now since 1996. And taught special education for the Anchorage School District for 17 years. And retired about a year ago.
All right. Well, we'll talk about your ideas for governor in just a bit. But Andrew Lee, you're running as lieutenant governor. Tell us a little about yourself.
I was born and raised in Alaska. I'm the grandson of homesteaders in the Eagle River area. I did my K-12 schooling in the Anchorage School District, then went up to University of Alaska Fairbanks and got a degree in computer science. I've worked at the UAF Supercomputing Center. I've interned at the Central Intelligence Agency. I've worked as resident assistant at UAF Residence Life. Since leaving the Supercomputing Center, I have been a self-employed gold miner off the coast of Nome, where we dredge for gold on the bottom of the Bering Sea.
Interesting. A wide range of experiences there. And Mr. Fish, you're running for U.S. Senate. Tell us about your background and what you're doing currently.
Sure. My family moved me up here when I was 5 years old back in 1962. My father transferred up here with Alaska Airlines. And I've been here ever since with a short stint in Minnesota for about 3 years that didn't quite work out. But also, I've been in the Alaska Army National Guard aviation unit for 20 years. I've married a girl from Spinard, Mary's been married with for 25 years. I was Airport Heights Community Council president. I sit on the Citizens Advisory Commission for Federal Areas. I did a five-year term as Alaska State Commission on Human Rights. And ever since I retired from the military, I've been involved in whatever I can do for my community. And I think a lot of that is working within the Libertarian Party and promoting the Libertarian message. So here I am.
Yes. Well, thank you for being here. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide to call with your questions. Or in the Anchorage area, it's 550-8422. You can also send us an email at talk@alaskapublic.org. So let's discuss some of the ideas within the party platform for those who aren't familiar with these concepts, and then we'll hear your ideas for the offices that you're seeking. If you were to give an elevator pitch to someone about what libertarians believe and what you'd like to see as far as governance, what would that be? Anybody can kind of jump in here.
Well, I'll take it. We believe in individual rights. Only an individual is endowed with rights. Individual right of life, liberty, and property. And government's only real role is to ensure those rights, enforce mutual contracts, and defend the rights of every individual. Unfortunately, we have a government that has decided that force is good, and they can use that government force to do good. And our contention, at least mine, is society is where good comes from, and government is to enforce that good. So there's a separation there. As said, Thomas Paine said it in Common Sense. He clearly defines the difference between society and government. And I think we've confused that to the point where we have all these unintended consequences of government trying to do good things. It never turns out. Hmm. We need to turn that power back to the individual and back to people to work together in a mutually with mutual consent to do good things for their community and themselves.
Mrs. Cliff, would you like to add something to that?
Well, yes. I think that's a really, really fine description of our philosophy. We have the slogan, minimum government and maximum freedom. And I think that really kind of puts it all in a nutshell. And when Mark was talking about force, people don't really think of the government as force. But when they force you to pay taxes, for instance, they're forcing you to subsidize other services that you know, for other people. And that's a way of being forced. And I think and that's just like a minimum kind of thing. Anything you can be jailed for, you know, is the use of force. And so one of the things that we work really, really hard at is protecting individual liberty. And that's a big part of my platform right now, because I'm looking at running against three candidates who are all social conservatives and believe that individual liberty is not as important as the collective. So that is one of the really important things that I'm bringing to the table as running for governor. And that applies to many, many things. Like, for instance, and I like to use this example, in New York, they wanted to ban large soda pops. Well, people are responsible for their own decisions. You know that soda pop is not good for you. If you want to buy a large soda pop and drink it, that's your responsibility. The government has no business in getting between you and your soda pop. It's crazy. And the same thing would apply to maybe like e-cigarettes. I think everybody agrees that vaping is not harmful. Secondhand vaping is not harmful to people. So But there's a movement here in Alaska to ban e-cigarettes because it's harmful to the person who smokes them. Well, the person who smokes them may be smoking them so they stop smoking regular cigarettes, which are even more harmful. And it doesn't harm anyone around them. So they need to take, people need to take responsibility for their own lives and their own decisions about their health, about their bodies. That's an important piece of the libertarian creed.
1-800-478-8255. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. 550-8422. 550-8422 is the number in Anchorage. We have libertarian candidates with us today on Talk of Alaska. Mr. Andrew, did you want to add something to that?
Yes, another aspect of libertarian philosophy is that we want the smallest, most local government. So not necessarily less government overall, although in this case we would, but for that government to be as local as possible so that you can walk down the street and talk to the person that made the decision, the government decision, and voice your concerns to them. Right now we have a situation where a lot of the decisions that are made that affect our lives are made by someone in Washington, D.C., where we don't know who they are, we can't access them, we don't know their family, there's no way to talk to them. So the most local control is what we're looking for. And that starts at the individual. The individual is the most local person to you, and then your family, your community, your region, and your state.
Let's take that example that you gave, Carolyn, about soda pop and cigarettes. Mm-hmm. With the idea of individual responsibility, individuals taking responsibility, Do you have concerns about the potential impacts to society with the health expense that may come from obesity or from lung cancer if someone's a smoker or someone drinks too many of those big, enormous soda pops?
And that's an excellent question, and I get that question all the time. And in our philosophy, of course, we are not in favor of government payer systems where the federal government or the state government through using federal funds is paying for medical needs. You know, we would be more in favor of people getting their own insurance and working with private companies, paying for their own medical needs. Every time government gets involved in the medical field, the costs go up. I can remember back when I was young, We actually paid for our doctor's visits out of pocket, and it didn't break us. And I think that this is something that has happened. As the more government gets involved in healthcare, the prices go up and it becomes unaffordable for everybody who does not want to go out and buy a big insurance program or is not on insurance. So that's a huge question. And, you know, as libertarians, we would like to scale back all the things that we find. There's only one good thing I know about the Affordable Care Act, and that is that the insurance companies can't drop people for pre-existing conditions.
So you would not be in favor then of the expansion of Medicaid that Governor Parnell has said he's not in favor of? He's got a task force looking at it. His challenger, Bill Walker, says he would do that immediately. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, that's one of the things that Parnell and I agree on, is I would not expand Medicaid. And my reasons might not be exactly the same as his, but I look at it today, 2 years down the road, when we have to pay for it. And we have a budget right now that's not sustainable. The largest departments are Department of Health and Social Services and Education. And we are not able to pay for our portion of the Medicaid that's going on right now. We have there's a computer system that's supposed to be operating. So it's supposed to be operating for 4 years to pay the providers. They finally put it online about a year ago. It's not working. Our state government has had to loan money to the providers to keep them going until they can get the money processed. So paying the providers hasn't been working. Our Medicaid system isn't working. And they estimate that it costs about $11,000 per person that's on Medicaid now. Now think about if we expanded it by 40,000 people, like they claim that there's 40,000 people that need Medicaid. If we expanded it by that, we're talking close to, we're talking half a billion dollars, excuse me. And that's what we would end up with eventually. Half of that money would be paid by the federal government. The other half of that would come out of the state coffers. Now, people are trying to tell me, oh, no, it's 100% for 2 years, and then it's 90%, and by 2020, we'll pick it all up, right?
Mr. Fish, let's talk to you from the U.S. Senate perspective of the Affordable Care Act. We've been talking about that. When they first proposed this legislation, it would have been a single-payer system, and that got tossed out in the negotiations. What are your thoughts about that? Would that have been better, worse? What do you think about the ACA?
Well, you know, the libertarian perspective is free market solutions. If they tried them, they would have worked, and we would have solved the problems. But they decided to go the other way. And I understand that one party was control of the government, and they had seen had a huge generational wish list that they tried to fill. And they knew that this was their only chance. So they ran through a piece of legislation that had everything in it that nobody looked at, with the intent that, oh, well, we can adjust it later. Well, the Affordable Care Act right now does not exist anymore. It's been changed 44 times, 24 times by executive order, which means 24 unconstitutional times the Affordable Care Act has been changed. The executive orders cannot be used to override an act of Congress, which is law. Regulations cannot be contrary to law. Yet this administration continues to do that, and we have a Senate that is fine with it. They sit on it and don't do anything about it. Because why? Because they have fear of losing money to their constituents.
What would you propose in if you could change the ACA and have a healthcare system that you think could work for the nation? What would that look like?
Well, most of what they put in place needs to be scrapped. It's simply shown as unworkable. When my small businessman brother has got insurance for his two male employees and his 58-year-old wife that requires him to carry pregnancy and maternity insurance, that bundles one size fits all. It's certainly, you know, each individual should be able to select the services that they want and not be forced and mandated to buy services they don't need or desire. You know, when I grew up, my father never had insurance. Had five kids, never had insurance. But you can bet that his children were monitored carefully for their health, their risks, and behaviors were part of that, because there were severe consequences. So we lived in a different world. I understand that. Mm-hmm. But we have to get back to a sense of personal responsibility and an idea that a person's individual health is managed by them. And that means, number one, they have a menu to select from. They can choose their services. Number two, they ought to be able to buy and purchase their insurance from anywhere, any source they want, not be restricted to certain pools or certain states. And I think if you opened up the marketplace, made it competitive like they should be in a free market society, you'd have a better product.
All right. 1-800-478-8255. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide, or you can call us locally, excuse me, in the Anchorage area, 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a caller now from Fairbanks. Good morning, Harry.
Hello. What is the libertarian stance on native sovereignty and subsistence rights?
Thanks for the question.
Well, as libertarians, we believe in the most local government possible. And so that would mean that you and your community should be in charge of the things that affect only your community. So that can be the in charge of the hunting rights around your village and your community. For the animals that don't migrate out to other communities, areas, and so that you should also be in charge of the fish in the rivers that are in your community. If your decisions will only affect you and your community, then you should be the ones that make those decisions. It's not a matter of native or non-native or race or all that. It's a matter of who you are and where you live. And you're choosing to live in a rural community, and there's a lot of prices you have to pay to live in there, but there's also the benefits of having easier access to all your local fish and wildlife.
I think we default to individual sovereignty instead of the idea of a collective sovereignty. So anybody, you know, has those rights over their own property, over their own liberty. They shouldn't be dictated by any group of people on how they live their lives. But when it comes down to a commonly held resources that affect us all, like fish and wildlife, like salmon and caribou that migrate across all other landowners, you know, they have to be managed collectively. And I would suggest in that collective management that it belongs to the state and the property owners to manage efficiently. They have to talk to each other. And it has to be a co-management. But what I don't see happening in that co-management of our resources is including the federal government, including the influences of people 5,000 miles away who've never walked off of concrete, that are making cultural and traditional decisions on our resources. You know, these decisions need to be made by Alaskans in Alaska. And I understand that there's problems with, you know, this the rifts in state government between urban and rural. But I would suggest to you that the Republicans and the Democrats keep those rifts alive simply because they benefit from it politically. And I think libertarians would, in state house and in the federal house, would be the catalyst for changing for more rational policies, because we're not polarizing people. If you believe in individual liberty, if you believe that you have a right to subsist, which all human beings do, well, then I think you can agree with the Libertarian Party's stance on it.
Well, let's take that a little bit further for rural Alaska issues. There's a lot of controversy over the idea of law enforcement in rural communities. Many of the villages don't have any sort of law enforcement presence. If there's trouble, it can be days before someone gets in there. There was a scathing report from the Tribal Law and Order Commission and talking about the need for more law enforcement presence in rural Alaska. What, from a libertarian standpoint, would that look like? Would the tribes have authority if they were in a native community? Who would be in charge of law enforcement in rural communities?
Well, ideally, the law enforcement will come from the community. It will be someone who is vested in the community and someone that is respected in the community, ideally. And if that's not possible, then the elders of the community should be able to kind of say what kind of a person they want to have in the position. I think that the first part of that is that the elders of the community and the leaders of the community need to have a lot of say in what kind of law enforcement personnel they will have in the community. Well, we've had a lot of what we've had happening is people coming from outside or people being hired from outside, coming into these communities and not understanding the culture, not understanding how the community works. And even more importantly, I think that there needs to be like a safe house in every community where people who are having difficulty, like with domestic violence or sexual assault, or even just children that need to go someplace safe, where they're feeling that they are being neglected. Every community needs to have a safe house where those children or those people that are feeling victimized can go and get some help.
And where? How would you imagine that those kinds of services would be paid for? Who's going to be responsible for making sure that there is a safe place in these communities for people to go to?
People have gotten along for thousands of years without having a state government to pay for everything for them. And I think that this is also something that can be logically done within the community. It could actually be the school that could be a place because it's already paid for by state funds, and there's usually people around all the time in the school buildings. In the small communities, the school is a community center, as I remember very well and know from going to even the smaller villages than Antioch, the school was a hub for the community. So it could be one of the places where people go for safe haven. What I would propose, too, is that the community get more involved with their schools. That what I found, because I was working at the Alaska Native Cultural Charter Center for the last 3 years that I did work in the school district, is that the community involvement, the parent involvement in the schools makes all the difference in attitude, all the difference in academic learning. Just knowing that people really care about you makes all the difference in the world.
Let's take did you want to follow up?
Well, yes. Another aspect of that is America has a 400-year history of public safety and defense of the community that's based in the community. Right now, we have National Guard members in virtually every community, in the state, including those villages. You know, we need to parlay the assets that are there right now and making them responsible for their traditional job. A problem is, though, is we've been shipping those assets overseas to fight foreign wars. So if you bring the guardsmen back, you know, those central places could also be the armories in a lot of these places where people can feel secure and safe in times of crisis. That's the traditional role of the National Guard, and unfortunately it hasn't been exploited that way.
So are you talking about sort of a community militia, a citizen or National Guard militia in these communities?
It's always been that way, and the resources are there. But the problem is we're not utilizing them in the community. We're extracting them out of the community and putting them on foreign soil somewhere instead.
We'll take a quick email comment, and then we're going to go to a break. From Kodiak, here's an email comment from Jay in Kodiak. All of Alaska's commercial fisheries are highly regulated by both the state and federal governments. How do libertarian values mesh with the need to have an orderly, sustainable fishery?
That's a great question, because there is a problem with commonly held resources, and obviously fish is a commonly held resources. You know, it's not that we're for limited government, not for no government. I want to make that distinction, because in when you're dealing with commonly held resources, especially in our oceans, clearly there's treaties with other countries. There should be unilateral treaties with each country, so they're easily enforced. These blanket treaties that managed by the UN, such as Law of the Sea, is just another way of getting revenue to a large central government that doesn't really manage it well. But we need to enforce our treaties with other countries. The U.S. Senate is very important in that, because they're the ones that ratify those treaties. And we need senators that actually can look at Alaska's interest outside of all the tens of millions of dollars that are poured in their campaigns by outside interest in order to manipulate their decision. So an Alaska-based senator with Alaska-based solutions can have as much influence on those treaties as possible. But ultimately, you know, we do have to come to a consensus of some sort in order to manage the resource. And once we come to that consensus, the key thing is enforcement. And enforcement should be used simply to sustain the yield for all users. If it's not good for everybody, it's probably not good for anybody, ultimately.
We have Libertarian candidates for Governor, Lieutenant Governor, and U.S. Senate on Talk of Alaska with us today. We'll take your calls, and we have a lot more questions when Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
The historic Anchorage Hotel, offering space for rehearsal dinners, engagement parties, business meetings, or social gatherings. A boutique hotel in the heart of downtown. HistoricAnchorageHotel.com. And by
Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, with health plans designed specifically for Alaska businesses. Learn more at primera.com/newalaska, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We have Libertarian candidates with us today talking about their party platforms, their ideas for limited government. We'll take your calls at 1-800-478-8255. That's the statewide number, 1-800-478-8255, or in the Anchorage area, 550-8422, 550-8422. We're going to take another call now. Shirley is in Fairbanks. Good morning.
Good morning.
Do you have a question?
I do. I want to just comment. I like what I hear so far. If America is broke, how come we give all these food stamps, all this stuff to these hurting people, and they depend on us for that stuff? What are you guys going to do about that?
I'm not sure that I'm real clear about what your question is, Shirley. Can you help us understand better what you'd like to know?
Well, as you know, we have a lot of people on food stamps, and I don't know the number. I just heard it yesterday, but I don't remember it. And it's families, you know, grandmothers, great grandmothers, children are all on food stamps, and they live on that, and that's what they live on basically. And how can we get them off of this so that America, you know, if we are broke, aren't we doing that to ourselves because we're giving all this stuff?
All right. Thanks for that question. And Mark, would you like to answer that?
Well, yeah, I can take that first start. You know, a big problem that we have is, look, if you look at Alaska, we're a gem in the world of natural resources. We've got so much wealth right here in this country that there's no excuse for any of our people to live in third world conditions. And what we need to do there is number one, is bring all that decision-making home and have the people make the decisions here. I mean, those individual decisions as well. You know, if government can provide the proper information to people and create the, not create, but allow the economic opportunities to be created, we can cut all that dependency out. But what happens is politicians like you to be dependent on them.
Yeah,
that's how they get elected. That's how they keep it going. As long as they can send you a little mailbox money, your life will not be totally miserable, but it will never improve. You know, only
right.
You can improve your life, and that's the message
what's the
that we have
to.
Well, personally, I think the answer is getting our resources back. What's happened is the management of the land and that wealth that's created on that land, those decisions are made 5,000 miles away, and they don't take into account Alaska's needs. You know, so if we could create that wealth here, there'd be plenty of jobs. And there'd be plenty of resources. Certainly, the government can provide information that's saying, look, in agriculture, these are the crops that you can grow locally. In food storage, this is what you can do to help yourself. You know, I'm surprised in Alaska, in just a generation's time, how many young people have forgotten how to can food.
Even work.
Yeah, that too.
Right. And that's probably the crux of the matter here is this society, and I know exactly what you're talking about, where you have generations and generations of the same family that are using the we're just going to have another baby, and we'll have you know payments from the government every time we have another baby. And, you know, the grandmother's taking care of the children, and the daughter is continuing to have more babies. Yeah, these things are happening. I don't know to the extent that they're happening, but I think part of that, you know, when you are on unemployment, for instance, you were required to go down to the state and tell them that you're looking for a job. And you need to put down the employers that you visited to apply for a job. You know, I suppose that it's possible that people are not really serious about that, but I think that this quality of at least volunteering and pretending to look for a job would be something that would be useful. Is to say, well, yeah, that's fine. We're going to help you out right now. We know you're having a hard time, but you know, can you watch children one day a week so this other mother can go look for a job? So we get that helping mentality going, where people are working together as a community to help themselves get out of that rut.
Let's continue that theme here. We have an email question. This is from Tom in Fairbanks. He says, it's a little bit harsh. He says, so libertarians want to go back to the good old days when churches and neighbors took care of those in need. We had much, much higher poverty levels and deaths of children and the old. Two of you have talked about how it was when you were young. I bet you weren't poor. I'm sure you think it would be unfortunate, but letting the poor fend for themselves and die is okay if non-government resources aren't adequate?
Well, we're not talking about pulling the rug out from anyone. We're talking about improving the opportunities available to people by removing the restrictions and the barriers to entry that so people can help themselves. We will need to keep all the promises that have been made by us and others before us, but we need to stop making these unsustainable promises. There's so much that we can do as a society, as a people. And all those deaths he's talking about in the old days, that's medical technology has come a long ways, and that was a lot of it. You know, rich kids were dying too 100 years ago. It wasn't just poor kids. But there's a lot that we can do. 200 years ago, we had a sustainable cultures all over the Alaska, and we've lost something there. We've lost that self-determination, that self-reliability, where neighbors helping neighbor and not relying on someone 5,000 miles away.
All right, 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. 550-8422 is the number if you are in the Anchorage area. We're going to take another caller on the line now. Gary is in Homer. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning. I'd just like to ask a young lady that's running for governor to articulate her philosophy on abortion. Thank you very much, and I'll take the comments off the air.
Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you calling me a young lady. I'm actually a grandmother. I have 5 grandchildren. I've been married for 42 years and have 3 professional children, adult children of my own. The libertarian philosophy on abortion is not a philosophy on abortion. It's a philosophy on personal responsibility. We believe that decisions about having children, about raising a family, all of these are very personal decisions that are made by the woman, by her family, by her church, working together as a community to make these decisions. It is a conscientious decision that is made to raise children, to have children, to raise children. It's a conscientious decision that is made in the privacy of your own family. And that is the national platform on the Libertarian Party site. In the local Alaska Party, it's such a contentious thing that we actually took it right out of our platform and we don't even talk about it because everybody has their own theories on this. We have a lot of libertarians that are adamantly pro-life. We have libertarians that believe that it is a personal decision that is made in privacy and that no one, the government should not be involved in that decision. And there are people that have religious beliefs that they hold to, Again, religious beliefs should not enter into what government decides.
It is interesting to think that you have libertarians that are at odds with the idea of individual choice when it comes to abortion.
Oh, yes, we do. Mm-hmm.
You wanted to speak to this, Mr. Fish?
Yes, I take a little a different tact on it. Like I said, libertarians believe in life, liberty, and property. And clearly, even Roe versus Wade has put life inside a woman during pregnancy. At the point of viability, they recognize that as a human being, even before birth. So Roe versus Wade has already got it in there. So what society in general is talking about now is a matter of degree. You know, when is that point of viability? And I think technology is putting us into the place that we'll soon have a point of viability that may be even outside the womb. Now, this is why I support Rand Paul's Life at Conception Act. He says, you know, it honors that life at the point, life begins at the point of conception, and that is a human being and should be treated as such. This means that in the future we have artificial wombs or people that are actually cloned outside the body. When they grow into human beings, they are considered to have rights as well. So I think it's important that we lay that out in the future. But also in that act, it clearly states that no woman should ever be put on trial or charged with a crime of having an abortion. It's nonsense to think that we can regulate human nature to that extent. You can't prove it. You know, are we going to have strap teenage girls down and force them to term? Are we going to put women on trial who had a miscarriage and add to their terror by making them prove it wasn't an abortion? There's a line that can't be crossed there, and I think every libertarian and frankly a lot in the pro-life community themselves say, "Oh, we would never do that." But we need to ensure that never happens. Now that said, we don't, as a society, haven't come to terms with this, so we shouldn't be providing by the government means, the tools and mechanisms to do this. This is personal responsibility. If you can't pay for your own birth control or you can't pay for your own abortions, government shouldn't be the vehicle to do that. You have a partner in this. They're responsible too. And if either one of you are not responsible enough to make the decisions for yourself, well, certainly we see that government gets involved, and that's not good for anybody.
All right. We're going to take another caller now. This is a caller from Antioch. So Herman in Antioch, good morning.
Well, hi, Herman.
Yeah, good morning. I kind of disagree with your position on your view on abortion because that's my question. A lot of women, they say they have right to have abortion, but a lot of the babies that are born, being aborted are women. And my real question is the same question that I asked Bill Walker about gay marriage, you know. And I got a different answer than I was expecting because the people voted not, for the Defense of Marriage Act, and it seemed like it's not in their coordinated vote, but it's not our native way or any other country's way for a man to marry a man, a woman to marry a woman, and it seemed like one judge shouldn't be the one to make the decision for us what should be law, But I thought Mr. Walker would say that, but he said he wouldn't fight it in court. What's your opinion on gay marriage?
Can I take that first?
Sure. Mr. Fish?
Well, on the federal level, we have in the Constitution that even the states can't deprive people of their individual right to life, liberty, and property. So I think the gay community has brought an injustice forward. Frankly, marriage should have never been put into the government regulation and rule of law. It should have stayed with the churches. It's a social construct, not a government construct. Now, what is the government construct? Well, that is a contract between two people who love each other, who have consented to merge their finances, merge their decision-making process. And I think that could apply, the government contract, a consenting contract between two parties can be anything that they want to draw up. And once they consent with each other like that, well, then you know, they can the government has a right to enforce that contract. It doesn't have to be based on sex. It could be an aged brother and sister who have no family left that make a contract to take care of each other in their senior years. So one person can make a decision for another, maybe even outside the family. If you find a person that you trust and love to make decisions for you when you can't, those contracts should be available in government. But marriage itself, marriage belongs to churches and society where it's always been. And it's only been a short time where government's been involved in marriage at all. And I think that was a mistake to begin with.
Mrs. Clift, Carolyn Clift, do you agree?
Yes. Yes. I think Mark's points are very well said, well stated. And the problem with the marriage amendment to the Constitution that was done in 1998 is even at the time, you can look back in the ballot books that came out to talk about it. Even at the time, they realized it was not constitutional to do this. It is not constitutional by our own Alaska Constitution. But the legislature, in their wisdom, went ahead and brought this forward as an amendment to the Constitution, and the people voted on it. And you will see, even if you go back to 1998, that it was unconstitutional at the time. We have, in Article 1 in the Alaska Constitution, we have Section 1, which is about our inherent rights, which grant the same rights to all people. And we also have Section 4, Article 1, Section 4, freedom of religion. No law shall be made respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Well, if we have ministers right here in Alaska, in Anchorage, I know, that are willing to perform gay marriages, the state has no right to say they can't do that because that's the exercise of religion. But our Constitution says they cannot do that. Now, the other part of that is that the marriage license itself came about as a way of preventing blacks from marrying whites. And that may not be well known, but it was something that came out of that era. And it was, why do people need a license to get married? You know, do they take a training class? Do they need a permit to get married? No, they don't. And what the marriage is like what Mr. Fish just said, it's really a contract between two consenting adults to care for each other, to care for their offspring, to make financial decisions, to make medical decisions. It is only a contract between two people, a legal contract, and that is all the involvement the government should have in marriage.
Would you advocate for the term marriage stays within the church's realm and perhaps a social contract would be?
Absolutely.
Is that what you're
alluding
to here?
Actually, I would call it a domestic partnership. Or civil union. A lot of people like that term, civil union. I think we should just strike. Libertarians believe the definition of marriage does not belong to the government. So we should strike that.
Let's take one quick email question before we have to take another break here. Here's Colleen in Kodiak says, do you have a stance on Pebble Mine?
Well, I'm a gold miner. And when I first heard about Pebble Mine, I was really excited about the idea of it. But the more and more I learned about it, I could not see a way that they could build that mine with any technology that I'm aware of, where they could build it safely, where they weren't going to harm others. That's the first rule of libertarianism, is to not harm others. And if the Pebble Mine can't show that they can build a mine, I haven't seen a mining proposal yet. They don't even have a plan. But once the plan is developed, we need to review that plan to see, one, does the science make sense? I'm a scientist first. Does it look like they can build that mine in a way that's not going to harm the people around it, innocent people that have nothing to do with the mine?
Agree?
Yes, I do agree. I do believe that we have a process in place that should be followed. But it's interesting enough that the company itself is slow at producing their plan, because I think they're waiting for a more favorable political environment. It's a crony capitalist deal that's going on, and that's not good for anybody. The mine itself, you know, well, they say they can do it. Well, if it's interesting enough that the people that are were in charge of constructing the mine and its security devices, its dams and stuff, had one in Canada that is based on the same model that just failed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it went all over the place. So really, it's changed, you know, my position. I believe the process still needs to be followed, and I don't think anybody should circumvent that. But in that process, I think we will find out that the Pebble Mine is unviable and shouldn't happen.
Right. Alaska's existing permitting process is very rigorous. It's one of the best permitting processes in the world, very environmentally conscious. And so if we follow the existing laws, I do not think that the Pebble Mine will ever be approved.
All right. Thank you for those comments. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll take your calls and more questions for the Libertarian candidates who are joining us today as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, who believes that success isn't simply having an idea, it is knowing the right lender to help bring it to life. More at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
Welcome back again to Talk of Alaska. We're talking to Libertarian candidates today for governor, lieutenant governor, and U.S. Senate. And we're going to plow through a few callers now. We have Sylvia in Anchorage. Good morning, Sylvia.
Good morning, and thanks for being on the show. First of all, I don't tend to lean to the libertarian way, although I was always taught if you keep your eyes and ears open and your mouth shut, you can learn something. And I do learn things from everyone who runs, and I've learned things from you this morning. And I have a great respect for anyone who wants to serve their state and run for office. However, when you are so close to the time for voting, and the polls and the reality of it are showing that it will be a very close two-way race. You could actually determine who the next governor will be by staying in the race. So I'd like to know, how do you feel about that? And who would you choose as governor if it's not yourself? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sylvia.
Oh, great, great question. Yes. I do feel that my being in the race, I have a lot of reasons for running. And one of the reasons I have for running is to get my voice out there. And what I have discovered is the more I get my voice out there, the more I hear my voice coming back from the other two candidates, the main candidates that you're talking about. So they're starting to talk more like libertarians in order to get the libertarian vote. So I think that's kind of a nice thing that's coming out from all this running that I am doing. No, I would not pick either one of the front runners myself. I have reservations about both of them. I don't want to do any mudslinging right here. I'm that's not my purpose. All of us are running on the same platform. The budget that we have now is unsustainable. We are all talking about that. But I'm a libertarian. That means that my roots go back to, in Alaska, you can go back to the late 70s when we brought in the permanent fund dividend, and we brought in the permanent fund and the dividend, let me put it that way, and we brought in we took out the income tax. And all of that happened when we had libertarians in the legislature here in Alaska. So it is time to have a libertarian governor. It is time to have somebody who is going to go in there and make that budget sustainable, make sure that we never have the income tax come back, make sure that we continue to have permanent fund and the permanent fund dividend. And I believe that I'm the person that can do that. Do I believe that Parnell can do that? I think Parnell could lean it out a little bit more, but he has too much political baggage that he has to keep everybody happy. I think Bill Walker has made promises to all the unions and all the people out there, and he has to make everybody happy. I don't think they can go in there and really cut that government down like I can.
All right. Thank you, Sylvia, for that call. We're going to go now to Jean in Fairbanks. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning. My question, Laurie, is mostly for Mrs. Cliff, but for all the candidates. I wonder what your stand is on public education. And I noticed that Mr. Fish mentioned crony capitalism. And if you do support giving vouchers to parents to use in schools, in private schools, how would you keep, quote, crony capitalism out of education? And also, Mrs. Clift, since your long and apparently happy and successful career was in public education, how does that blend with your libertarian beliefs?
I'm so glad you asked that. And we've had many discussions in our party circles about this.
And we have about 1 minute, so.
Oh, okay. Yep. Very quickly, I think Alaska has the best public school choice of any state in the entire union. And I will stand by that. There are states in the lower 48 where you're not even allowed to homeschool your children unless you have a college degree. This is the best state for public school choice in the entire nation.
Yep.
I would add to that as senator, I would eliminate the federal department education and bring all that decision making and resources back to the state, which is constitutionally mandated to educate the children.
Yeah, I oppose using tax dollars for public or for private schools. Tax dollars should only go to government institutions and not to private schools. So I would oppose the voucher amendment as proposed.
And furthermore, if there is a parent or a family that feels that the public school does not have the choices that their child needs, I think it should be a local decision going through the local school district and not a state decision. So if the local school district wants to help that family out by reducing their property taxes or by issuing some kind of a small voucher so that they can access tutoring or special private school services, I think that would be fine, but that would be a local decision.
All right. Well, thank you so much to my guests today on Talk of Alaska, Carolyn Clift, who is running for governor, Andrew Lee, who is running for lieutenant governor, and Mark Fish, running for U.S. Senate. You've been listening to Talk of Alaska. We will be back tomorrow for a second Talk of Alaska with Forrest Dunbar, who is running for U.S. Congress, for the U.S. House. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Monica Goki, our engineer, and Josh Edge on phones. I'm Laurie Townsend.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network and by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Salmon are all around us. They're in our rivers and our freezers. They fuel our economies and keep Alaskans connected to our traditions, our families, and our friends. The Salmon Project celebrates all the ways salmon are interwoven with our Alaskan lives. Learn more about the project and find out how you can be involved at salmonproject.org or find them on Facebook. Salmon, it runs deep in all Alaskans. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.